Hey there, are you sick and tired of feeling sick and tired? Join Adel Kozilski and Faggy Stern as they explore ways to reverse chronic illness and achieve vibrant health. Your health is your only wealth, and together we can be better. Hashtag healthy you, wealthy you.
Beautiful good morning to all our listeners. This is the Healthy You, Wealthy You show. In studio. Chaff, chaff. No, I'm in studio virtually with Faggy. How are you, Faggy?
Very well, thank you. How are you? At least it's my lucky day.
It is your lucky day indeed. We were marveling just before the beginning of the show how great it is that we can now tap into technology that allows us to be in different places, in different spaces, and still connect. And that really was a gift of COVID, I think, for a lot of people, and has allowed a lot more flexibility. So we're really, really thankful for that. We're also thankful because we have the venerable Dr. Jack Cussell with us after the Pesach holidays. He's been traveling as well, and we welcome him back to the show. Dr. Cussell, good morning.
Morning, Adel. Lovely to be back.
Right. Before we start the show, Dr. Cussell, you just wanted to dedicate the show.
Yes, Adel, thank you. I think I would like to dedicate the show to our memory of our fallen. It's Yom HaZikaron today, and even though we sit here in perfect comfort, we remember the families that have been injured and by all the goings on that have occurred. And this show is dedicated to them, to our brave fellow Jews who've taken the toll.
Amen, amen. May their memories be a blessing, and may their sacrifice not be in vain, which I don't believe it is, because I think we're seeing the living miracle of the land of Israel today, but we obviously want to stop the bloodshed and hopefully come to a place of peace and of harmony between all peoples, and of course with the arrival of Mashiach. And on that note, we're going to talk about a different war, because we're on the path of war in trying to get people to live healthier lives and to take responsibility for their health. And we always come back, and we even had it last week, to immunity, to this whole thing. We just spoke about COVID, right? And that whole dark chapter that we went through, even though we gained a lot from it. On the other side, we need to constantly discuss our immune system. I actually had a discussion with somebody last week to explain how complex our immune system is. It's not just one thing, like take vitamin C and you've got a strong, immune system, or inject one thing and you've got a strong immune system. So Dr. Cussell, I'm going to hand over the mic to you, because you're going to elaborate on that, on these points.
Well, why did I choose this topic? When done what I've done for 65 years, I'm now assimilating some of my knowledge, as you know, and trying to write a book. And I was struck by the great advances made in many fields of medicine, but the field that is still lurking in the background and starting to emerge like a brave new dawn is the understanding of the immune system. Great advances have been made in prevention and treatment of inflammatory disease. Great advances have been made in the treatment of malignancies, in the understanding of inherited disorders, and in the understanding of metabolic disorders. But the missing link in all of these conditions has now become glaringly obvious. I'm referring to the role of the immune system in every single aspect of medicine. What is immunity? Immunity is the body's ability to fight off harmful intruders, either from without or, importantly, from within. It's a Shem, has given us this gift from the very time that we were born to do this. Bacteria or viruses from without, growths, tumors, foreign bodies, or noxious substances from within. And it's how we not handle and nurse this immune system that ultimately determines our destiny. You will see what I mean when I get to the end of this program. Current medical research is being more and more directed to harness our own immune system in understanding all these disorders. I will firstly deal with the challenges that arise from the outside the body, namely the increasing challenges posed by the emergence of more and more killer bacteria and more deadly viruses that are emerging. The euphoria that accompanied the introduction of antibiotics and the euphoria that accompanied the introduction of vaccinations is beginning to wane a little bit. In the last 50 years, the focus has shifted. Bacterial infections 50 years ago were responsible for approximately 90% of all infection. Viruses only for 10%. Today, 90% of the infections are viral and only 10% are bacterial. And of the 10% that are bacterial, a significant number are killer bacteria. Of greater concern is that the great majority, if not all, the viral infections are not sensitive to antibiotics, and only a small majority of the remaining bacteria infections have also become resistant to antibiotics, leading to the emergence of the so-called killer bacterium. Why has this occurred? When antibiotics were initially prescribed, bacteria were very sensitive and everything was easy to control. Over the years, bacteria have become more and more resistant to conventional antibiotic therapy, leading to the production of stronger and stronger forms of antibiotics. But unfortunately, we are starting to lose the race. We have almost reached our limit of the amount of antibiotics we can synthesize to try to control the killer bacteria that are killing us. As far as viruses are concerned, viruses behave differently to bacteria. As viruses enter the body, they may be very, very vindictive to start with. And of course, in viral pandemic infections, they can be killer infections and fatal. But the classic knowledge with a virus is that as time goes on, they usually seek to live in their host. They mutate downwards and mutate into less virulent forms. And this is what we have to try and understand. Sure enough, a virus enters your body and it's a killer pandemic. You have to vaccinate everybody on earth, virtually, because otherwise hundreds and thousands of people will die.
Okay, so we're getting here a definition between bacteria and viruses, which I think is very, very important, just so that we will lay the basis of understanding when antibiotics should be used and when they shouldn't be used. This is your platform to ask Dr. Cussell any question. You can SMS us on 34519, or you can WhatsApp us on 061-895-1019.
This is the Healthy You, Wealthy You show with Adel Kozulski and Faggy Stern.
We're speaking about our immune system. And just before the break, Dr. Cussell, you were drawing a delineation between a bacteria and a virus. And if I understand correctly, the nature of a virus is when it replicates, it actually reduces in virility, in its intensity.
becomes less virulent.
Right.
And seeks to live in your body as a host. It doesn't seek to kill you. So you might, doing a viral swab today, find that COVID-19 that killed so many people at the outset has now mutated down to alpha, delta, beta, whatever it is. It has now mutated down to a completely non-virulent form of COVID, which obviously doesn't need vaccination in every single individual. Sure, your population at risk, your older people, your people with morbid conditions, they are the ones that need to be given the protection, not every single person that has had COVID.
Well, as you're saying in this, it's also the people that have low immune system.
Right? Low immune systems, any immune deficiency. Any lupus erythematosus where the immune system has failed us, sure, that's where you intervene. So what is the mistake, not mistake, what do we fail to utilize? We fail to utilize our own immune system that we were born with. And how have we failed to do this? We can use vaccinations to build up antibodies naturally in the body, to provide immediate and long-term protection. And of course, this is done in a viral pandemic, as happened with COVID-19, as has happened with many other severe viruses. Immediate steps had to be taken to prevent the pandemic spreading and the morbidity and mortality which would have resulted therefrom. Vaccinations have been responsible for saving hundreds and thousands of lives in this situation. But we need again to consider that most of the viruses that attack us exhibit the ability to mutate down and attempt to live in our bodies, and we act as their host, at which stage these viruses become insignificant to the ordinary individual, except in individuals immunocompromised and individuals at risk. The case of the killer bacteria, this becomes a much more serious problem. Because bacteria also mutate, but in their case, they may mutate into more and more harmful and dangerous forms. And as we are now landed with in some of our intensive care units, killer bacteria, which pose a far greater challenge because they have become more and more antibiotic resistant, as well as more resistant to natural antibody. The only way we can hope to bring this problem under control is to try to control our use of antibiotics, certainly for the less formal, dangerous forms of bacteria, and to be very careful that when we do administer antibiotic, we're doing it for the correct reason.
So is that because you want the immune system to be strong in case of a killer bacteria? So the
your
person
immune
has...
system is strong to start with. I'm coming to that. As you're born, you are provided with an immune system that will protect you. I've now reached 88 years of age, and I would like to tell you now that the amount of antibiotics I've had in my life have probably been three.
Wow.
Probably been three. No more than that. It doesn't mean that I'm against antibiotics, but it doesn't mean that for every white spot I've had in my throat, I've been given antibiotic therapy. Because of those white spots that occur in your throat, probably none of them are harmful bacteria. A great majority of them are viruses. And if you start doing that, then A, you won't get a result. The virus, the white spot will clear in any case, and you may start to cause antibiotic resistance. Naturally acquired immunity commences at birth. There is a transfer of maternal antibodies through the placenta before birth and through the colostrum of breast milk. And if you can think of no other reason for using your breast milk, at least use it for 72 hours to provide the baby with some sort of protection because it has been shown that if you use the colostrum and you go on feeding for breastfeeding for at least 3 months, while the baby's immune system can take over itself, you will prevent the very serious infections in the first 3 months of life, namely enterocolitis, infections of the bowel. They don't tend to occur in breastfed babies.
Wow, that's fascinating.
And if there's no other good reason for doing this, this is the reason. Another way of acquiring natural immunity is actually through contracting the disease. Naturally acquired immunity generally persists for life, whereas the artificially acquired immunity through vaccinations has only been known to persist for life in one single condition, smallpox vaccine. In all the other vaccinations, polio, measles, whatever you like, always the vaccination has to be modified and it has been changed, because the virus has mutated to different forms and you have to go on changing the vaccine.
Dr. Cussell, can I ask a question here? I've been the recipient of this. What happens to viruses that you end up carrying in your body? As you said, the virus looks to you as the host. So what happens when you're walking around with Epstein-Barr, for example? In your system, it's causing havoc, and you can't get rid of it with antibiotics.
You will never get rid of Epstein-Barr's antibiotics in the first place. It's a viral infection.
No, that's what I'm saying. So what do you do? There's quite a few.
Try and build up a natural immunity, which has been in some way compromised. That's why you get Epstein-Barr virus. Just to quote you an article, an editorial in the British Medical Journal about 30 years ago by none less than the editor of the British Medical Journal. If you want to diagnose the viral glandular fever syndromes, put them onto Augmentin for 72 hours, your glands will blow up and you'll have a full-blown glandular fever syndrome. That's the answer to your question.
So you're saying that you have to build up your immune system in order for the Epstein-Barr to not have the effects that it has?
Of course, you've got to build up your own immunity. Now, we're coming to this now. Oh, for the return of the days when our mothers took us to play with children with that chicken box.
So that we I want a clarion call here, okay? Because today we are even giving vaccines against chicken pox, you know. Yeah. And so now we're smashing the immune system even more. As opposed to, and I actually said to somebody told me, no, my kids got chicken pox. I said, marvelous. I said, if you've got any more kids, send them to get the chicken pox so that you can actually build natural immunity. So again, I want to be clear. We're not talking about fatal diseases over here. And if we sit around and we don't allow our kids to catch anything, we're actually compromising them.
Yeah, I'm coming to it.
Okay.
Chickenpox, we acquire lifelong immunity. To not carry that immunity into adulthood, we can get very serious chickenpox as an adult. Now, the proviso is that any child with a known immune disorder, compromised immunity, particularly a child on steroids, on cortisone, and any drug such as methotrexate, the cancer drugs, which may suppress the immune system, must never be exposed to any potentially harmful disease, including chickenpox. Because in these situations, steroids, multiple immune disorder, and drugs like methotrexate, you get hemorrhagic chickenpox, and that can kill you. So I'm not saying this for a child that is immunocompromised. I'm saying it for the ordinary child that is running around your play school or garden. They do not need to be given this. Because as you'll see later on, by doing these sort of things, you're confusing your immune system. The immunity is actually waning. Some won't agree with me, but
Can we just say, Dr. Castle, that this is definitely your favorite topic?
My favorite.
Anyone that knows Dr. Castle out there knows this is his favorite topic.
Always earn your medication. That's my favorite topic.
Exactly.
A good general rule to adopt for vaccinations, these should unquestionably be given where the comparable disease has either a significant morbidity or fatal outcome as compared to giving the vaccine. And of course, nobody would deny vaccines to people with smallpox, prevent smallpox, polio, measles, meningitis, tuberculosis, just to mention a few of the important few. Vaccinations are also very important in specific age groups. You take respiratory syncytial virus. This has a 25% mortality in children in the first year of life. But what sort of children? Premature babies should always be given vaccine. And babies with congenital morbidity, such as congenital heart disease, they are susceptible to RSV. The mortality is 25%. And of course, these people should be given Synergis. But of course, Synergis is very, very costly. And then the big fight comes. It starts off with the medical aid, where you can't get them to authorize it without a long, hard fight going on. I apologize for saying this, but it's still horribly true. That's RSV infection. Other important examples are old people, people who reach the age, well, what do I call old?
Only after 120-year-old.
People who reach the age of over 60, let's say.
Ay, ay,
ay. Dr. Castle.
Where it becomes important to use pneumococcal vaccine and herpes vaccine, because these two conditions are potentially dangerous and can, and again, it's immunocompromised adults. Don't give it to everybody. I'm 88 years of age, and I've never had any of this. I've never had pneumococcus, and I've never had herpes.
Wait, so if your immune system isn't great at over 60, you should have it?
Yeah. If your immune system is compromised, sure you should have
it. So, Dr. Castle, how do you measure that your immune system is compromised? I mean, you'll know that you're compromising it if you are on drugs like you said, like cortisone or cancer drugs. How do you know that you're, how does an ordinary person know that they've got a weak immune system?
In coming to it.
Okay.
I would like at this stage to mention the revolutionary changes. This is the answer. That have occurred with the discovery of the autoimmune syndrome in the 1950s, where a man called Damaschek got the Nobel Prize in Medicine, where it was discovered that that certain specific infections that occurred mainly in the throat could trigger an antibody. All of a sudden discovered that your streptococcus, certain type, Lanceville group A in the throat, formed an antibody, formed a key that not only fitted into the lock of the cellular streptococcus, it also put it into the lock of the kidney cell and caused nephritis, in the lock of the valvular cell in the heart and caused rheumatic fever. A similar process occurred with another streptococcus that caused nephritis. Skin rashes also occurred because of infections that produced antibodies that attacked the butterfly area of your face, and of course arthritis. Certain types of infection can trigger an antibody response which starts to attack your joints. Then came idiopathic purpura, not idiopathic at all. It occurred because you got an infection and the antibody that was produced to that infection also targeted your clotting cells. And finally, autoimmune hemolytic anemia. And yet, the answer to your question, Adel, how do you know when the person ends up with myocarditis, nephritis, hemolytic anemia, purpura, arthritis, and skin rash, You then call that person systemic lupus erythematosus, and it represents a complete malfunction of the immune system.
Can you take a blood test?
But it still doesn't tell you why you can diagnose total lack of immunity. I'm coming to that. In the above discussion, we have dealt with some of the most important external factors that are influenced by the immune response. We now come to the important realization of how the body's natural antibody can be harnessed to treat and control tumors and growths, one of the greatest killers of mankind, namely malignancy, the internal intruder.
All right. We've got a lot of listeners listening in. Some saying, I agree with the doctor, build up your immune system. I remember as a child in South Africa, we were given lots of antibiotics. It was in the days when the doctors made house calls. And there's a listener from Israel that says, I want to tell you that in Israel, only in extreme cases do they prescribe antibiotics. I've never been prescribed an antibiotic. I don't believe in them. So this is a something that, you know, a lot of people think about. And this is some of the comments. We welcome your comments. 34519 is our SMS line. 061-895-1019 is our WhatsApp number.
This is the Healthy You, Wealthy You show with Adel Kozulski and Faggy Stern.
Welcome back. We're chatting with Dr. Kassel about our immune system. Dr. Kassel, are we getting down to the nitty-gritty now?
Yes. Where did this all arise in the 1950s? Routine postmortems were carried out in otherwise healthy individuals who died of accidental causes. This started to provide the answer. In these aging individuals, it was discovered that when you sectioned the organs, there were a significant number, in some cases, tens of cases of little tumors which were malignant that had arisen in the aging body. But two things had happened. The malignancy was encapsulated, it was controlled, and it hadn't metastasized, it hadn't spread. Why was this? It was because, again, the body was producing a natural anti-tumor vaccine. And as we all sit and have these potential killers arising in ourselves, we control the growth or spread or the development of this tumor in the body by our own anti-tumor vaccine. It was... This resulted in further research, and all of a sudden they started to learn that the total answer to cancer, and please don't get me wrong over here, a cancer treatment is still, in some cases surgery, in some cases radiotherapy, in some cases chemotherapy. But what has now changed the complete picture of cancer is the so-called antibody therapy. What the world is now doing, it's doing what your body's been doing since the world started. They are producing an anti-tumor vaccine. A, Israel did it by concentrating the natural anti-tumor antibody in women who had BRCA gene breast cancer. People concentrated this antibody in their laboratories and they re-injected it into the patient. And wow, what happened? All of a sudden, the tumor disappeared. The secondaries disappeared, even in the brain and the lung. And the great majority of these patients to this very day are now being cured. Yeah.
That's fascinating.
The reconstitution of this natural antibody, which has been reintroduced into the patient after being concentrated, has started to significantly change the results in cancer. It's led to the term monoclonal antibody therapy as an adjunct to the conventional forms of cancer therapy. The addition of antibody therapy, again, it's fitting the key into the lock. You can take a key, which is the antibody, and you can try and put it into a lock, and it won't fit. You can take a master key, and you can put it into several locks, and it will fit. That's the simple explanation. The world at the moment is looking for the master key. The single key has been found. It's in BRCA gene cancer in Ashkenazi women, prostate cancer in males. Israel recently announced that most of the blood cancers are under control by this mechanism, the lymphomas and the leukemias. Significant too is the other part of the story. Moderna COVID-19 vaccine during this COVID-19 pandemic was administered to the entire Israeli population. What happened? They discovered that of 16 patients with cancer of the pancreas, which is almost inevitably fatal in most cases, 8 out of those cases went into remission as a result of the Moderna vaccine. In other words, the antibody on the Moderna vaccine, the spike antibody, fitted the spike on the surface of the pancreatic cancer cell, and when it locked onto it, it destroyed it. So we're hitting exciting times in medical science. As medical science progresses, more and more specifics are now being successfully treated with adjunct antibody therapy. I would like to conclude, you know, by saying that some of the greatest discoveries in medicine have been simple discoveries. Think of Thomas Edison and the electric light bulb. Think of where we've gone from there. Think of Alexander Bell and the telephone. Now, as I sit here in the third phase of my life, I start dreaming about antibody therapy. This undoubtedly is the answer, if not the total answer, to the eventual complete eradication of one of the greatest killers of mankind, cancer. When you match the configuration on the outside of the tumor cell to the naturally produced antibody of your body, that is the answer. That's how you kill the tumor. The two lock onto each other and the tumor cell is destroyed. So a new dawn is arising in medicine, the dawn of the antibody. I thank you for listening, and I hope that I've conveyed some of the mentioned information to you that you understand. I don't claim to be correct, not at all. Research may prove me to be wrong in many phases, but I think the general summary of what I've said is where medicine is standing at the moment as far as these therapies are concerned. And with the whole world concentrating on this now, I'm sure the answers to colonic cancer, the answers to brain cancer, the answers to lung cancer are not far off. Thank you.
Thank you for your insight, Dr. Cussell. I do want to mention, though, that you know, from a holistic point of view, and in terms of trying to maintain our immune system in pristine form, there are also other modalities or ways of thinking that people are looking at. Where we should not come to the point where we're looking at modern medicine to help with a lowered immune system. Last week, we had a guest that spoke about our gut health and the fact that if we have the correct bacteria, we have the correct balance of bacteria that helps our immune system. Okay. But just to mention for those people that are listening, there is gut health. There's the complication of parasites. If people are carrying parasites, they will mess with your immune system. There are certain lifestyles that one has that can mess. And I speak from experience. One of my children had a complication that you spoke about, nephritis. Okay, which was a streptococcal infection, was because the immune system was smashed. And at the end of the day, while there was modern medicine and that it did help him survive, while we tried to come to answers, the answer was that he was allergic to milk. And I was giving milk every 4 hours. I was bashing down his immune system. When his immune system was compromised, he was open to streptococcus. So there's a lot to discuss around there. I think that today we discussed the iceberg that we can see, and you know what it is that we can do. But just to bring attention to our listeners that in fact there's a lot under the water as well that can be done.
Adel, if I may interrupt, the next talk that I've prepared is dealing with the natural and dietary factors that influence the immune system. That's the talk. And it stems from a book that I read in the 1950s. It was called Man Alive, You're Half Dead. And it classified the three major killers of mankind at that time, thrombosis, strokes, cancer, and diabetes. And it showed how by incorrect diet and incorrectly feeding your metabolic engine, you precipitated all these conditions, precipitated the cancer. It's all starting to fit into place. People will tell you that smoking, nicotine causes lung cancer. They'll tell you that curry in strong concentrations and chilies causes gut cancer. True, absolutely true. But you've got to see how it does it, and that will be my next tour.
Fantastic. So that's a wrap-up for the Healthy You, Wealthy You show for today. Thank you again, Dr. Cussell. Thank you, Faggy, for joining me on this odyssey for becoming healthier. Wishing all our listeners a wonderful week ahead.